Well, Victorian teenagers thought to be at risk of radicalisation by groups like ISIS could be banned from the internet, even if they're not planning an attack or preparing to join a militant group overseas. Under this proposal from Victorian Police, officers would be able to apply for community protection intervention orders that would impose curfews on suspects and force them into de-radicalisation programs. The state government is now considering this plan, and the Attorney General, Martin Pakula, says it's designed to protect young people from extremism.
Effectively something that would deal with people who are at risk of being radicalised prior to some serious activity having occurred. So it really is a proposal which is primarily about prevention. The Commonwealth is seeking to have this on a consistent basis across the nation, so it's my expectation that they will have conversations with governments in all states and territories.
That's the Victorian Attorney General, Martin Pakula. But the idea is concerning some Muslim leaders. They believe their community could be unfairly targeted, and this proposal could actually do more harm than good. Earlier I spoke with Professor Shahram Akbazadeh, the Deputy Director of the Alfred Deakin Institute for Citizenship and Globalisation. He's also author of papers on the limits of de-radicalisation programs in Australia.
Thank you for having me.
This law that's proposed in Victoria would be to intervene with a young person, with a teenager, before they are radicalised. From the work you've done, can you tell when someone is on the brink of radicalisation? Are there signs?
There are signs, and the best people who can detect those signs are the people in the family, there are other community members. These are the people closest to people at risk who can detect signs of radicalisation.
So if the people close to them in their families or their classrooms detect them, and if they alert the authorities, is it wise, in your view, to have some kind of prevention or protection intervention order like this that could move in and immediately, for instance, put limits on who this person can associate with or put limits on their movements or their internet access in the hope of preventing them from carrying out a crime?
The problem with intervention orders and the approach that the police is taking is that it sounds like quite an overreaction and heavy-handed. The risk is that by singling out individuals, you effectively put a mark on their head and you effectively treat them as terrorists. And this is exactly what the community is concerned about, exactly what the community has been trying to avoid, the fact that all these new initiatives, new anti-terror laws, they emphasize the security aspect, whereas what we need is more community and grass-level projects and initiatives that empower community leaders to address the problems.
In your view and from your experience, what might be the impact, the flow-on effect of, in a sense, as you say, putting a mark on a young person's head as, you know, a radical extremist or a potential radical extremist?
Well, I think it's going to be interpreted by the community, the heavy-handed approach, it's going to be interpreted by the community as a deliberate effort by the government to marginalise and stigmatise movements in Australia. And that's quite a counterproductive impression to make when we actually need movement leaders and community leaders to help with the radicalisation.
So are you suggesting that part of the reason that young people become radicalised or are open to online grooming, for instance, from radical terrorists is partly because they feel marginalised, they feel alienated in the first place, and this might make that worse? Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly right. The problem is that the Muslim community in Australia has been effectively singled out, has been painted with the same brush: you are a Muslim, therefore you are a potential terrorist. And there is a sense among the Muslim community, especially among the youth who are quite impressionable, there's a sense that no one's listening to them, that their voices don't count, their ideas don't count. And in fact, the government of Australia is working deliberately and purposefully against Muslims. And the more we emphasize the security aspect, the more we encourage this perception.
And back to the original essence of this proposal, which is to curtail access to the internet for young people who the police or others think might be on the verge of being radicalised. I mean, we know the internet is a powerful tool. It's been a tool used to great effect by ISIS for recruiting. Is there some element of that proposal that you understand or you think could have some merit?
Well, I don't think you can control the internet. I don't think you can control access to the internet, and that's just not feasible.
You're listening to RM Breakfast. Our guest is Professor Sharam Akbazadeh, who is the Deputy Director of the Alfred Deakin Institute for Citizenship and Globalisation. Just on that point of going down the security route, though, it is a difficult balance. It's a fine balance, isn't it, to try and intervene to stop someone going too far down the radicalisation route, because we have heard of Australian teenagers in the past who their families had no idea what they were up to, and they were in their bedrooms basically online or on their mobile phones speaking with radicalised terrorists, and they were being groomed for violent action. How do you interrupt that if it's got to that point?
No strategy is going to be foolproof. We just have to accept that this in the times that we live and the terms of global interconnectedness, we can't always control and predict everything. There's going to be some margin for error. But chances of community leaders, chances of family members, friends, detecting problems is far, far greater than chances of the distant security agency, the police, to pick up signs of change in an individual.
Nevertheless, does the state have some responsibility to our teenagers if they are prey to, you know, extremism, if they are prey to extremists, rather, to being, as I say, groomed online by others who would have them come over to the dark side, so to speak? What should the state do? It can't sit back. It has a responsibility to the teenagers and to our community, doesn't it?
Absolutely. The state has a responsibility, and the responsibility means that the community organizations are empowered and given access to resources and given freedom to move, to really set the agenda and demonstrate to these individual youth at risk that Muslim community organizations are not the puppets of the Australian government, that they are not controlled by the Australian government, that they can actually set the agenda for what they want to do and how they see Muslim communities will benefit.
From the study you have done and the work you have done, state and federal governments are looking strategies to de-radicalise people, prevent radicalisation. What is already working?
What is working is empowering grassroots organisations, engaging with the potential radicals, engaging them in conversation, not stigmatising them, allowing them to express their views, but also engage with them critically and show them that there are different ways of addressing their grievances. Because bottom line is, these are impressionable youth who want to make a difference, who want to do something about what they perceive to be the injustice of the world.
Professor Sharam Akbazadeh, the Deputy Director of the Alfred Deakin Institute for Citizenship and Globalisation. We spoke to him a little earlier this morning. It's 8:15 on Breakfast.